Welcome to Bio, a podcast produced by the Biographers International Organization. Bio is devoted to promoting the work of biographers and advocating for biography as a genre with the support of biographers and biography lovers worldwide. I'm Bio member Jenny Skoog in New York City. On each episode, we talk with biographers about their work. In this episode, I talk with Bio member Hester Kaplan about her latest book, Twice Born, Finding My Father in the Margins of Biography, published by Catapult in October 2025. This interview was recorded on Zoom on March 24th, 2026. I'm really excited about this book. I'm a memoirist, and this book really toes the line between autobiography and biography. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. You open the book at your father's casket, which I found to be a really interesting choice, with the realization that he never looked you in the eyes. And yet you write that the details of the past, like my father's face in the blooms, appear to me now as the bones and seeds of this story I will tell about him. When did those details start becoming a book rather than just grief?
That's such an interesting question. I started the book where I did for probably two reasons. One is that is actually the truth of where I, you know, this sort of struck me that he was my material and this is the story that I wanted to write. So it felt like the right place. And then later on, as I began to read his book and read, you know, his notes and essays and things that my father had written, one of the things he talks about is starting a biography, and I think this could be true of a memoir or a autobiography or a piece of fiction, where the character or the narrator feels him or herself coming into life. I really felt that at that moment. He wasn't coming into life, literally, because he was already dead, but I felt that this would be a new life for me if I could read this. And then through, you know, the writing sort of revivify him. So that was a way to begin. I think that the question about the lilacs, and the lilacs are so meaningful to me. You know, they just have so much weight. One of those strange things that, you know, you realize all your life you've loved this one particular thing and that you could build worlds around it. That's lilacs for me. And I think because we had them in front of the house, because I knew that my father's mother liked them, and my father loved them. And as I wrote in the book, he would cut these huge plumes and put them all over the house. And they just, you know, when they're at their peak, they're just that color and that smell. I think that the notion of details becoming sort of the seeds of a story, I think that probably comes from many sources. But one is that, you know, I've spent the last 30 years writing fiction. And fiction is, you know, so much about the details and the specifics. And particularly in a short story, the real estate is so expensive in a short story that the detail has to, in my mind, has to do more than one thing. It has to really do double or triple duty. It has to have all these sort of resonances and echoes.
Right.
So I think that's really sort of where it came from. And my father was very specific about using specifics. Be specific, be specific, be specific. Mm-hmm. Don't ever be vague. And so that was one of those sort of internalized writing techniques that I think I got from him.
Well, let's get into your father for a second. His name is Justin Kaplan. You called him Joe. You write that you, quote, felt alone with my father, always nervous with him, even as we talked, because it wasn't really us we were discussing, unquote. And then there's this, quote, I'd never seen him cry except when the dog died, unquote. For readers who don't know him, who was Justin Kaplan as a father and as a man?
While I lived with him, which was until the time I went to college, and we lived in the same house, we never moved, he was always present, physically present.
Right, because he worked from home.
Worked from home, and his study was right. You came in the front door, his study was right on the right. You couldn't get into the house without passing the study. But he was not really there. He was not really there. I always had this impression that he lived inside his study. It's where he spent his most time. I felt that that's where his sort of emotional energy went. His creative energy obviously happened there. It was where I felt he often retreated from, just the sort of the chaos of family life. So he was a very, very private and hidden man behind these doors. If you were to, have a conversation with him, I think you would find him very charming. He would ask you lots of questions, be totally tuned in. He was, modest, and he had a wicked, wicked sense of humor. And he didn't like blowhards or pretentious people at all. And he could kind of, I could see it happening sometimes, he could kind of work the conversation so that they would trip over their own sort of pretentiousness. He was not an easy father. He wasn't mean. He wasn't neglectful. He just wasn't really emotionally present. And now I'm going to sort of contradict that and say, I think he was emotionally present, but it was all, he kept it all inside. He could not express any of it. And so, if you have a child like I do, who I feel was, whether because of him or in spite of him, whatever, someone who wanted a lot of kind of emotional interaction, this was difficult. I couldn't really reach him. I don't know that he couldn't reach me. I don't think he could reach children very well.
You write that he never said, "I love you." You craved his attention. You never said, "I really craved this man's attention," but he remained an enigma to you, and maybe even now. And I could really sense that. I could feel it. For listeners who don't know who Justin Kaplan is, can you give a brief summation of who this enigmatic, famous figure is?
He was born in 1925 in New York. He was an orphan. His mother died when he was six. His father died 6 years, 6 or 7 years later. It's interesting that there's no clear record of when exactly that happened. And in his work, he contradicts himself. Sometimes it's six, sometimes it's seven. That suggests a lot about what he was like. He remained in New York with his older brother, the family housekeeper, whose name was Georgia, and an aunt who, we used to call or was called a spinster aunt. He was bookish, plagued with eczema, an orphan. He was taken care of very much by his older brother, and he went to college at 15
At Harvard.
at Harvard. He tried graduate school. I think sort of the confines of being inside and being too bookish was not for him. He was really sort of an independent scholar. He sort of bummed around for a while. I think he was probably pretty depressed. Then he took some jobs in publishing, and then he decided, he was going to give up this sort of promising career as an editor and write a biography. And he wrote this biography of Mark Twain, which is his first book he ever wrote, and he won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award for the first book he ever wrote. So, I mean, to me, that's pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable.
Well, one of my favorite parts of the book is when you write about his beginning this book and getting the telegraph from the publisher, his editor?
Editor.
Yeah, from his editor that was like, "Congratulations, like this is amazing." And you were just born.
I was
And
just bored.
it took some time for this book to come out, but when it did, it came out to much acclaim, and you never read it. And he never read your writing either. And you guys kind of tiptoed around each other for the rest of his life. And it's only now, after his death, that you read this biography. What made you crack it open?
I don't think he ever read my writing, my work, but he might have. But the fact that he wouldn't talk to me about it is the
Of
same thing.
course,
But
yeah.
that's, that's sort of a mystery to me, whether he did or not. So I began to read this book because, as I said, I always sensed from, I think the minute I was sort of a sentient being, that I was born into him writing this Twain biography. I always sensed that the real him was happening in that study, and that the real him was in the making of the work. And that because once he was dead, I had no longer had access to him, even though had he been alive, we couldn't have had the conversation then either. How he chose to write and how he chose to shape this biography of Mark Twain and his psychological insight and the creation of a sort of, the portrait of a man would tell me a lot about who my father was, and that I could read into his sentences, his imagery, his structuring, his choice of where to begin a chapter, where to end a chapter, would really, again, sort of tell me something about who he was. Throughout my entire life, we talked about books. So that was the way for us to talk about what was important to us and what mattered to us without actually saying, like, this is about me. So after he died, I continued sort of this dialogue with his book. We're talking about this book, and we can talk about this book, but I know that when you write it, Joe, you're really revealing what it is that you think and care about.
I remember there was a scene in the book where you were sitting outside of his office. He was in a frenzy and he was like, "Wait," he noticed you there and he was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And
Yes.
you were like, "I'm just hanging out." And he's like, "Well, do something. Read a book." And you're
Read a
like, "I
book.
don't have a book." And he was like, "Go to the library." He goes into his office. He comes out with The Count of Monte Cristo. You write about that experience. What you say about it is really interesting. I will leave it to the reader to discover that chapter, but it's a beautiful chapter on exactly what you say about he must have known how you were feeling, and that's why he chose that book for you.
I like to think so, yeah.
I want to talk about biography then, in terms of his theory of biography, because I think this is where our audience will really lean in. Your father had strong ideas about what biography requires. He wrote that, quote, "The question for a good biographer is not why, but how. How it felt for the subject of the biography to live his life," unquote. And he believed that a biographer, quote, "had to possess a mythical and ordained link to his subject, and that some spiritual twinning and affinity existed even before the first word had been written," unquote. As you turned his own lens on him, did his standards hold up?
As a little kid, I saw all these twinnings, right? Down to the fact that, Mark Twain loved cats and my father loved cats, or that Mark Twain had a mustache, or that my father for a while had a mustache. All these very, 5-year-old, 6-year-old understandings of the world. And I then concocted this idea, or I believed, I mean, I believe it was sort of within me already, this notion that Twain and my father were somehow related. I knew it wasn't blood, but there was some special ordination, I guess.
Yeah, a kinship,
A
kind of.
kinship, certainly a kinship. And so when I began to read as an adult, I was hoping for the less childish, joinings, cats and mustaches, and larger, more abstract values or understanding of how to tell a story or whatever it was. And I began to see those convergences. I do say in the book that this is sort of my story. The convergences that I see are sort of my, I don't know if concoction is the right word. I'm making those connections. Not everybody would, but I am
But this
because
is
that's
your
what I'm.
biography. This is your story to
Exactly.
tell.
That's
Yeah.
it,
And
because
if
that's what
I,
I'm looking for.
right. And if I were to write a biography of Justin Kaplan, it would be very different.
Very different,
Same
right?
man.
Very different, yeah.
Yeah.
That line about how it felt for the subject of a biography to live his life was really a guiding light in my book. And I kept coming back to that line. And that line was from a sort of rebuttal to an article that Stanley Fish had written, sort of taking down biography as basically just invention. It was interesting to me that sort of the most profound or the most, as I said, sort of guiding light of a line it was in a letter that my father had written to the newspaper in response to that article. It helped me sort of figure out how to structure the book a little bit, or to remind myself always what I was after. But as I said, I spent 30 years writing fiction. And one of the things my father had said to me, or we had talked about over the years, was that fiction is not about how people respond to a set of events. It's about how this particular person responds to this particular event at this particular time. And then you're always sort of narrowing down. And so the process of trying to figure out what it felt like for my father to do this kind of work was really exciting and very, very rich and fulfilling.
I want to talk about the research process that you went through, sort of weighing the evidence, right? Your primary sources were, of course, his published biographies, his notes and his correspondence, and your own memory.
Yes.
These are three very different kinds of evidence, but all very important. How did you weigh them against each other, especially when they pulled in different directions? So, sometimes our memories, we remember something very different from what it would look like on paper, for instance.
My first impulse in writing this book was I was going to write a biography of my father. And when I started, it was very clear to me that I just don't have that kind of discipline. I have a different kind of discipline. And that what I'm interested in my writing is something different than writing a biography. And then I quickly realized that I could not write about my father unless I was in it. So there comes the memoir, which I fought for many years. I did not want to write a memoir. Absolutely not. Anything but. And then there's the element of fiction or invention in the book that mostly has to do with these conversations that we're having. And I think what I began to see is that all these different forms are different ways of getting at the truth. One of the things my father and I talked about also is sort of the truth of fiction, that it may be invented, but it's true. It's a way of
Oh, yeah.
telling the truth. And so these were three different forms, the memoir, biography, and fiction, that allowed me to kind of create this cohesive portrait of my father.
You had full access to his archival documents.
Not really.
Okay, tell me
Yes,
about
no,
that.
I didn't. I mean, I made a choice early on. As I said, I'd started out as a biographer, writing. Thinking I was going to write a biography. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to go through his archives. I didn't. It's just not what was sort of feeding me. I think I was much more fed by memories. And one of the things that occurred to me as I began to look through his material was, and I think I wrote about this in the book, was that, he had been sick for a long time. So he knew what would remain in the apartment, which means that there was stuff he threw out.
Oh,
And
I'm sure.
I felt like, okay, this is what you've left me. And you've left me some really great and very weird stuff. That there's this is in the book, there's stuff about him going to camp. One of the things that I found were these two yearbooks from his camp from camps from the 1940s. I mean, over a lifetime in his 80s, this is what remained. So I had to, there was a sort of really interesting and rich dynamic with trying to understand what it was that he left and why he left that, when he could have left any other things.
Right.
And in terms of sort of the archival stuff, his research on Twain, it didn't speak to me in the same way that his scribblings did, or these things that he kept in his file cabinet. They were just much more resonant for me.
Was there anything in his office of the things that you did find in his papers or his correspondence that you were genuinely surprised by or shifted your understanding of him, maybe?
Yeah, I think, and I was a little squeamish about this. I found a file of letters that he had written to an old girlfriend. And I think I quote one of them in the book. And they were deeply personal, emotional, vulnerable, expansive in a way that I did not know him at all. It was the one piece of information that I found about him that I felt like, okay, I'm going to back off a little bit here because I really do feel now like I'm trespassing. That's not the story I wanted to tell.
Yeah.
So, this is where some of these forms sort of dovetailed. And I think that the ethics that I applied at doing the research in my father might be more on the sort of memoirist end than biographer's end, if that makes sense. One of the things that was really important to me was to every day that I sat down to write, or every bit that I was writing, ask myself, is the motive clean here? Is my motive clean here in adding a detail about him or about somebody else in the book? You have the questions that are driving you, but at the same time, you have to be open to the questions that might have driven them.
1,000%. And those questions might lead to more questions. You describe what you're doing as arrogant, a romantic's view, a trespass, an autopsy done with contaminated instruments. And elsewhere, you write that the dead don't get to choose who digs into their life. For a room full of biographers such as this, that's a charge that they or we all live with. Did writing this book change your relationship to those questions or deepen them?
I think they sort of affirmed them for me, that they are questions that still exist. There's a story that I want to tell that both exists separately from the biography, I guess, and also is entwined in it, if that makes sense. I don't think anybody could write about a parent cleanly. There's no such thing, right? So that's what I really mean about like an autopsy with contaminated instruments. I can't see these things, for instance, the way you might see them about my father, because they're so tainted with everything else. Those questions about sort of the romantics view or the arrogance are really, as I said, are really questions that, are still very much alive for me.
One of the things that you wrote that stuck with me was, through my writing about his life and mine with him, he is fully revived for me. It's a remarkable claim. It's almost a resurrection.
Absolutely.
Do
Yeah.
you believe it fully? Is revival the right word, or is it something more partial or maybe more hard won?
I think he is revived for me. I mean, I think he's revived and reconfigured. Two things sort of happen at the same time, which is that I understand him better, I feel, and I have more compassion for him. But in order to write the story of him, I also have to be more distant from him, right? I have to separate myself from him. So he is revived as someone who is not just my father, but as a person who, had his own life that was separate from mine. Yeah, I do feel that he was revived. I feel like I know him in a way that obviously I didn't when he was alive. That to me was sort of I guess the gift of the book for myself, to myself.
I loved the structure of this book, how there was this flow. There was no chapter that you could read as a standalone chapter because it really is a process of getting to know him. The way that you write it, it builds on itself. It was almost a novel. Everything just spilled onto itself. And I wonder what your writing process was like because this is not a series of essays or chapters that, you can just dive in and weave in and out of. It almost seems like you sat down at your desk and you just started writing and it flowed out.
I wish.
Yeah, so tell me about your process.
Yeah. I'd like to hear that it sort of reads as a novel, it flows as a novel. It's partially from having written fiction for all these years. And also hearing from my father and understanding from my father that Dramatic storytelling is a necessity, right? You have to tell a good story. There has to be some forward motion. There has to be some suspense. There has to be some tension. I did so much reading before I even sat down to read this book, and so many memoirs, and I love the form. So many memoirs are really about, you see me today, and I'm about to tell you this thing that happened to me, and but you know that I've survived. So, right, so we're going to take you on this journey, and or I discovered this, unbelievable secret that blew open my world. I didn't have any of that. Right, there was no secret about my father, so that the tension really that or the and the sort of dramatic storytelling had to be, was I going to get to a place where I felt that I understood my father, and that I could tell sort of my truth about my father. The structure was very difficult. It took a long time to sort of figure out exactly how to do this, and I had started, even given the first chapter, which starts at his death, I had started conceptually or conceiving of this book as a kind of a chronological,
Cradle to grave.
but that didn't make any sense because my cradle to grave was not his cradle to grave. And if I'm weaving these things together, that wasn't going to work. It then seemed more useful to me to sort of create these chapters around themes. Or, major ideas in life like work and love and family and that sort of thing. Again, my sort of experience in writing fiction is the sort of repeated object. I mean an object literally, for instance, lilacs, but I also mean it, in a larger sense, that you have these sort of repeated themes. And as the story goes on, if you can take the object or the theme and shift it a little bit, then there's movement. Right, so the lilacs might mean one thing here in the beginning, but by the end of the book, they mean something entirely different. But there is this kind of through line. There's a way to
And you
kind
do
of
that with
connect
a
the
few
dots.
motifs. Yeah, you use a few of those figures. Fascinating. Because we're a podcast about biography, and this is a hybrid biography memoir, I wanted to know if you have any advice for someone using this same format or weaving in a personal story with their subject, maybe some knowledge that you can impart on somebody going down this path.
In no particular order of bits of advice, I think it's instructive and important really to separate to know when you're writing where you're standing. Where are you in time? Where are you physically in relation to what you're writing about? And that helps sort of be clearer about what is imagined, what is fictionalized, and what is actually biographical choice. I mean, biographical fact, and then because then you be can become aware of how you're sort of weaving those together. I mean, one of the things that's kind of surprised me about this book is I consider myself an extremely shy person. I really don't talk about, I'm very uncomfortable talking about myself. And yet I've written this thing, and people have said to me, like, how could you just put your life out there? Like, that's one woman I've known for, I don't know, I would say 30 years. We're not friends, but occasionally we'll see each other at parties. We're sort of friends of friends. She said, I've sort of known you for 30 years, but now I don't even know what to say to you because now I know you in this completely different way. There's a way in which I think if you're not going to put yourself on the page when you're writing a memoir, if you're not going to be truthful about things, then you're not gonna get there. You have
Both
to be honest.
ways do.
So I think a kind of personal reckoning is probably, the best advice. I also think that certainly in memoir, it takes a while to find your place and your voice. And I think the term voice is really complicated, and I don't like to use it too much talking about writing. But you have the material. The challenge is how to find your way into that material, where you want to stand in relationship to that material.
Well, this book was a real treat for me to read. Thank
Thank
you
you.
so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your process with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That was my conversation with biomember Hester Kaplan about her latest book, Twice Born: Finding My Father in the Margins of Biography. It was published by Catapult in October 2025. This interview was recorded on Zoom on March 24th, 2026. To learn more about bio or to hear other episodes in our podcast series, please visit our website, biographersinternational.org. Ellie and Marie Fillengains created our podcast theme music. Carolyn Van Putten is our assistant producer. Cherie Newman is our engineer. And Sonia Williams is our executive producer. I'm producer Jenny Skoog in New York City. And until next time, thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.